David designed the sacred spheres of the temple. Solomon gave physical expression to that plan and could only hew to the plans for the temple that had originally been found within David's soul. The temple existed as a metaphysical reality in David's vision before it emerged in Solomon's era into physical concreteness. Welcome to A Journey Through the Siddur, Episode 25, David's Jerusalem and the Jewish Soul. I am Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's Journey Through the Siddur series is sponsored by Sherry and Neil Cohen in memory of their parents, Beatrice and Paul Milberg, and Harriet and Norman H. Cohen.
In Lion's Gate, Stephen Pressfield's fascinating book containing transcripts of interviews with soldiers and leaders involved in the liberation of the old city of Jerusalem in 1967, one man that appears often is Yoram Zamosh, who, we are told, commanded the A Company that was part of the 71st Paratroop Battalion. Describing their assault on Jordanian-held Jerusalem from the east, entering at the eastern Lion's Gate, Zamosh says something fascinating. Quote, "One of the legends of Jerusalem is that, of the 40 or more times over the centuries that the city has fallen, the invading host has always come out of the north. Jeremiah 1, out of the north an evil comes. Only twice in 3,000 years has Jerusalem been conquered from a different direction, once by King David, and now by us." End quote. Zamosh highlights how for Jews, one cannot speak of Jerusalem, one cannot really refer to Jerusalem, one cannot dream of Jerusalem without associating one's mindset with that of King David. And we consider this as we ponder a bracha, a blessing, about Jerusalem, in which the inability to forget David when we speak of the sacred city is made marvelously manifest. The next blessing in the Amidah embodies a plea and a prayer uttered for many centuries for the rebuilding of Jerusalem and for God's return there, meaning for God to make manifest his presence there. Yet strikingly, suddenly mention is made of a monarch, the most famous in Jewish history. The blessing reads, "Fil Yerushalayim ircha barachamim tashuv, to Jerusalem your city, may you, in mercy return, v'tishkon b'tocha kasher dibarta, and you will dwell therein as you have spoken, uvnei ota b'karov b'yameinu, and you shall build it up speedily in our days, v'chisei David mehira l'tocha tachin, and the throne of David shall you establish therein. Blessed are you, O Lord, bonei Yerushalayim, who rebuilds Jerusalem." Of course, this description of rebuilding Jerusalem, this prayer for God's return to Jerusalem, encompasses a plea for the return of the temple. What is striking, of course, is the mention of David. Why is this striking? Why shouldn't David be mentioned in the context of Jerusalem? It is striking because we have a different blessing about David, which is the very next bracha, the very next blessing, which begins at Semach David Avdecha Mehira Tatzmiach. Please speedily bring about the flowering of the dynasty of David thy servant. That blessing is all about David, without mentioning Jerusalem. Yet in the blessing, in the bracha about Jerusalem, David is still mentioned. This means that David is inextricably bound up with Jewish invocations of Jerusalem. Or as Rabbi Ezra Bick put it, quote, "In fact, what we see here is that Jewish tradition refused to have a bracha about Yerushalayim without reference to the throne of David, but eventually decided to have a bracha about the restoration of the kingdom of David without inserting within it a reference to Yerushalayim." In other words, David is an essential element in understanding Yerushalayim, but not vice versa. End quote. In other words, we can mention David without mentioning Jerusalem, but we cannot invoke Jerusalem without mentioning David. Why is this so? Why must David be mentioned in the context of Jerusalem? There are so many possible answers, and Rabbi Bick offers his own explanation. But I would suggest that what is occurring here is that Jews, after Jerusalem's destruction, were, throughout the centuries, through the recital of this blessing, keeping alive an image of Jerusalem in all its glory, in their minds and in their hearts. And David, who may have conquered Jerusalem, who may have made it his capital, nevertheless never merited to see the Jerusalem of his dreams, the Jerusalem of the temple, but nevertheless always maintained the vision of that Jerusalem in his mind and in his soul. Let me further explain what I mean. In historical terms, we tend to refer to the first temple as the Temple of Solomon. But the truth is that Solomon, though described in the Bible as one of the wisest and creative men in history, had no architectural or intellectual or artistic role in the design of the actual temple itself. That was all from David. That was all from his dream, from his divinely inspired design. Thus, the book of Chronicles tells us that David, before his death, brought the young Solomon before him, explained that God had denied him his own dream of physically building the temple, and charged his son Solomon with making his dream, David's dream, a reality. As Divrei HaYamim Chronicles informs us, every aspect of the temple was painstakingly planned in blueprint by David himself. Thus we are told, Then David gave his son Solomon the plans for the portico of the temple, its buildings, its storerooms, its upper parts, its inner rooms, and the place of atonement. He gave him the plans of all that the Spirit had put in his mind for the courts of the temple of the Lord and all the surrounding rooms, for the treasuries of the temple of God and for the treasuries for the dedicated things. End quote. In other words, Solomon, for all his wisdom, for all his brilliance, utilized none of his creative capacities in bringing this sacred edifice into being. All was as David had foreseen. All was as David had designed, with help from inspiration from the Almighty. In other words, David did not live to see Solomon's physical building, but that doesn't mean that David never saw the temple. In fact, what it does mean is that before the temple physically existed on the mountaintop in Jerusalem, it already existed in David's heart. As Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik explained, before the temple was made physically into radiant reality by Solomon, it already existed within, in the heart of David. And the truth is that it was this vision that had to be preserved on the mount itself. Meaning, if Solomon had deviated, if he had made the Temple Mount with different dimensions, the sanctity of the temple would not have appropriately applied. David designed the sacred spheres of the temple. Solomon gave physical expression to that plan and could only hew to the plans for the temple that had originally been found within David's soul. The temple existed as a metaphysical reality in David's vision before it emerged in Solomon's era into physical concreteness. And therefore, David was the model for Jews throughout the centuries when it came to having a vision of Jerusalem and of the temple, maintaining that vision before them in metaphysically radiant reality, even if physically that temple was lost and had not yet returned. We are thus able to understand why we mention David and his throne in the prayer for Jerusalem, why Jews for centuries mentioned David and his throne in their prayer for Jerusalem and for the temple, even if the very next blessing is all about David's throne. The remembrance of Jerusalem throughout the centuries was done in imitation of David, and the envisioning of a Jerusalem with the temple is done in imitation of David. Thus, after 70 CE, after the temple was destroyed by Rome, Jews prayed in the Amidah that Jerusalem and its temple be rebuilt. And they reminded themselves that if David could visualize the full glory of Jerusalem before that full glory was achieved, then they too could visualize the full glory of Jerusalem in their minds and hearts, even after the physical glory of Jerusalem had been destroyed. And that therefore Jews realized they could learn from David to keep the vision of Jerusalem alive until physically its glory would one day be realized again. In the book Lion's Gate, Yoram Zamush describes how he and his comrades made their way through the old city. Of course, the Jordanians had barred Jews from coming to pray at the Western Wall or anywhere else in the Old City for almost 20 years. You can therefore imagine Zamosha's surprise and the surprise of his comrades when they came upon Hebrew letters etched into one of the stones of Jerusalem, letters that clearly had been pretty recently inscribed. Of course, they didn't have time to ponder the words at the moment because they were busy liberating Jerusalem. But later, they returned in their discussions to that inscription and to the possibilities regarding who might have written it. Yoram Zamosh said in an interview as follows, quote, "That morning of June 7, I can't remember exactly when this happened, maybe on the way to the wall with Moshe Stempel and the others. At some point, we were climbing the stairs, Yair Levano and Dov Gruner, Moshe Milo and I, when we noticed a scrawl freshly scratched into the stone in Hebrew. 'If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, may my right hand forget its cunning.' This is a verse from Psalm 137, which also contains the line, 'By the rivers of Babylon we sat down and wept when we remembered Zion.' It is the lament of an exile and a vow to return somehow to the land from which he had been expelled." Who could have inscribed this verse? We debated this later. A Jew for certain, but from where and when? Could he have been a soldier? From Canada, perhaps? A member of the UN peacekeeping force? The Jordanians permitted foreigners to visit the old city at certain seasons of the year. Perhaps this Jewish soldier managed to acquire a forged baptismal certificate, as the Jordanians required. He pretended to be a Christian. He got himself included in a party of visitors. Seizing a moment, perhaps, unnoticed by others, he knelt and scratched this prayer into the face of the stone. End quote. So, Yoram Zamosh conjectured. Of course, we do not know who actually inscribed those Hebrew words, but the truth is that those letters spelling out, "If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, im eshkochech Yerushalayim," that verse mysteriously and incredibly inscribed in sacred stone by some unknown visiting Jew, is actually a profound metaphor, because in the end it was David who taught the Jewish people to never forget Jerusalem and to inscribe Jerusalem in their own minds and hearts. And it was in David's merit and in memory of his mindset that the Jewish people refused to forget, thereby ensuring that the Jewish people would return to Jerusalem. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.